Welcome to the UDIA Queensland's Development DROM podcast, where we speak to members and ask them to share some property industry insights and at the same time get to know our industry colleagues a little better. My guest today is Dave Hansen, Director Growth, Economy and Sustainability with City of Logan. David is a Brisbane-born, Logan-raised town planner who has spent the past 27 years working in planning and economic development roles across all parts of Queensland in both the private and public sector. In many ways, his current role as Director of Growth, Economy and Sustainability for Logan City Council is an opportunity to reflect on his own upbringing, given his parents aspired to leave Brisbane for the opportunities that only greenfield living could provide at that time. David is dad to three beautiful boys, a cricket tragic and Liverpool FC supporter, and someone with incredible awareness of any new bakery openings across Greater Brisbane. Thanks for joining us on the Development Drum, David. So, Dave, an average day in the life of Dave Hansen, what does that look like?
Well, I guess there's a rhythm to government that you can't get away from. So 20% of my day is probably just whatever's happening at that time of year, whether that's business planning, budget, corporate planning. So that's pretty time consuming.
Yes.
And then probably the exec we've got at Logan now is more tighter than it's ever been. So we do probably spend 20% of our time together.
Yep.
And that kind of looks like we have a workshop on a Monday, which is basically just pitching in all the problems that are hard to solve.
Yes.
And it's kind of a bit of a stream of consciousness sort of discussion, which are the best. They're the best chats of every week.
Yeah.
And then more into the people pitching their ideas on things they'd like to aim at, right through to approving things before they go to council. So ELT takes up a bit of time, but then the remaining 50 or 60%, it's such a wide portfolio. So I can be talking about a 1-2 lot subdivision that's gone pear-shaped or giving money to a business to attract them to building a material recycling facility with Ipswich and and Redlands.
Yeah.
I have immunisation as well.
Wow.
Infrastructure charges, or infrastructure policy, writing a new planning scheme. That's why I love the job.
Yeah, it's diverse.
But it's also the challenge of the job. You know, you get sucked into these meetings last minute to make a call and sometimes you don't really know what's going on yourself. So you have to catch up.
Excitement.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And which of those things, so obviously very varied diet from day to day, complex issues, I imagine, to, very operational, run-of-the-mill bits and pieces.
Yep.
Which of those aspects do you find most rewarding?
Anything that's new for local government, I guess. So a bit of a cliche, but local government can become a little bit of a cliche in some people's minds. But every day I see people aiming at incredible new things and they're only limited sort of by their own imaginations most of the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, that then goes into the funnel of resources and council support or otherwise. But those are the conversations that you find yourself in and you really feel like you'd prefer to have longer to stay in those conversations to bring those things to life.
Yeah.
That's really the purpose of my job, is to bring all of those great ideas and navigate them through the organisation so that someone at the end of the pipe, whether that's industry or community, sees a benefit and actually looks around and says, well, my council has added more value than I expected.
It's always deeply fascinating to me when we do our qualitative research that people have a genuine level of deep affection for their local government.
Yeah.
More so than any other level of government. They use other words in relation to to other levels of government. But there
so
is
do
this,
we sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. There is this quite genuine attachment to local government. Why is that?
Whether it's the closest to the community or the most immediate to solve people's problems, I always look at it through the lens of a disaster management.
Yes, okay.
So whilst we don't have necessarily the biggest capacity to help a community recover, we are first out there, probably the most connected with the SES as we knock on doors, you know, the economic recovery decisions around that. So that's a kind of an example where when people are in their greatest moment of need. But then right through to the real picking up someone's rubbish if it's been missed.
Yes.
You know, you can imagine you got dirty nappies in a rubbish bin and it hasn't been picked up.
Yeah.
You want that reaction. And I think Logan is one that's done that quite well, that it's resourced to react on the most important things. So that builds trust in the community. And I think as you go into rural communities as well, that attachment is even more so because they're often a bigger share of the employment base, for instance. So the affection runs quite deep as you go across the landscape of local government.
And does your team feel that too, Dave? Do they understand that, or do they see more of the pressure that comes with that affection and deep attachment?
They feel the obligation.
Yes.
Well, I think the important thing really to remember is that, like, we could never pay people enough to compete with private sector or even other levels of government now. Yep. Like, that gap has really widened in my time in local government.
Yes, okay, interesting.
So there's got to be another hook. There's got to be another value proposition for staff.
Yes.
But you don't have to work too hard to sell it because, like, we've only got 50% or so of our staff that live in Logan that work there.
Yep.
So there's a huge chunk of non-residents that are motivated equally to do great things for the community. And even our CEO says he's drawn to local government because you can pull a lever and see
the impact.
The impact. And it's not necessarily years later, it's tomorrow.
Yes.
So that will be forever a point of difference that we should hang on to.
Absolutely.
Very much so.
Yeah. Reflecting on your time and your current role, what achievements are you most proud of, aside from obviously doing this podcast?
This is a highlight today. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
All the hard things that we didn't think we'd get to. So examples probably would be carbon neutrality for the city. Getting there is only the start of the next problem. So how do you maintain trust, you know, when carbon neutrality is often met by largely buying credits?
Yes.
So how do you go to the next stage of delivering projects, local projects that are mitigating carbon rather than just a financial instrument? But getting to that first hurdle and having our impact as an organisation on climate properly priced into our budget in a recurrent sense, that's something that's very important to the team.
Yep.
Getting through administration.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, that was a real challenge, but getting through that in the way that we did and then hanging on to the sort of unique aspects of our culture has been a real proud moment for me and also certainly for the exec, that are, many of whom were there through that time in different roles and have now ended up maybe in an exec role. Real sense of pride. We don't feel like we lost a lot of ground. And even some of the examples through administration, like we've got the wing delivery service down there, one of the first in the world to have a commercial, that almost disappeared when... So you look back and you look back at everyone just getting back in the trenches and kind of a combination of begging, pleading.
Yes.
But also remaining confident about what the city had to offer those businesses and then having them trust us and be very happy with the result. I'll look back on those examples with a lot of pride and a lot of thanks to those organisations for putting their faith in the city. Yeah.
Do you put that survival through that period and coming out so strongly on the other side down to the culture, processes, organisation that was there
previously?
Strong to start, wasn't it?
It was strong to start, and that's, you know, there's a lot of people who contributed to that before my time. Cultures, you know, like you would know, it's a weird thing. It can disconnect really quickly. So we're known for a, like if you look at planning services or development sort of services, we're often seen in a certain way. They're very proactive. And, but it doesn't take much from time to time when staff come and go and leave to disconnect. So it's a constant, and that's what I've seen from the organisation, across the organisation, is that it's always kind of front of mind and it's something that we agonise over, like, especially now, like as there is a bigger churn. We've probably got more churn in staff. It used to be, you know, 7-8% a year. Now it's probably up around the 15%, which is still probably pretty good.
Yes.
But we notice how much more effort it takes to
just
to remind people of the way that we want to operate, like the way that we, culture is the way we do things around here kind of thing.
Yeah.
And as everything becomes more contested and money becomes tighter, the risk is that even within your organisation, people start treating each other a little bit poorly.
Yes.
Just need to resist that.
And how do you do that, Dave? What's the secret ingredient to making sure that the culture remains in a positive frame?
I mean, I guess it's probably like any organisation where you've got, whether it be a board or a group of councillors, like the tone needs to be set from the top.
Yeah.
And we've been very lucky this term with the councillors we've had and the mayor we've had. And that then provides the platform for the organisation to actually feel safe to set a tone and set a culture that is sustainable.
Yeah.
And we have seen the impact of when the elected part of a council has a wobble and that ends in administration.
Yeah.
You've only got your culture to fall back on and the integrity of the people that are in the organisation. So the deep dive that was then done into the organisation and to have it emerge unscathed and with nothing to answer to from an organisational perspective has, I know that's, everyone's very proud of that. So it's then telling people those stories, being open with those stories about what is it, what does that look like in the way you conduct yourself and where can your behaviour land you, whether it's from a integrity perspective or a cultural perspective, those little cumulative things do add up and get you to a good or a bad place. So no sort of magic ingredient that Logan has other than just keeping on talking about it, keeping it front of mind, keep investing in it. It costs money to run programs and run surveys and even take the pulse of the organisation regularly. That's that's an investment.
Yeah.
But yeah, one I hope we never go away
from. Shy away from.
Yeah.
Now, you've obviously during your career spent time in government and also private practice.
Yep.
What do you see as being the difference for a professional working across those two different types of organisations?
I don't see a lot of difference, to be honest. And maybe that's just my own experience. Like I only did a little bit of time at Gold Coast while I was at uni and then my first job was up at Townsville City but quite briefly for a year or so. So then I came back to 18 years of consulting and then found my way into local government, supposed to be there for 4 weeks and 8 years
here
later. Which is a pretty common story actually. Our current mayor tells a similar story. It, it took a 6 week gig and 32 years later that's right. So it's funny, like people have that I've followed in my consulting time, there's some now who work for council, like I, they have moved around and not become stayed in any one organisation. So maybe that's just my experience, but everyone's kind of motivated by the same thing of getting an outcome. And I think I've been also surrounded by people that have moved on when they felt like they've run out of motivation to stay. They're not just there for their lives.
But, which is probably a good thing.
But definitely a good thing, yeah.
And do you think that that mix of private and public experience has been useful for you though in terms of being able to think about how the other side of the fence, whatever that side of the fence is, might view a particular problem?
And I mean, I'm just motivated by love of the industry really. Like, yes, I've come from a private sector background. And this is probably what I see happening at the moment, like we're at risk of kind of losing each other's perspectives.
Yes.
So the more we can kind of cast our own mind back to, well, I'm not going to get 100% of my way there because I shouldn't, because that would actually undermine someone else's success. That's what we can't lose. So lovely in my own career to look back. And it's the relationships, hey? Like it's relationships almost have become a dirty word in government. But it's less about the relationships that can be problematic, more just about understanding the varied perspectives.
Yes.
And never ever will I shy away from that engagement.
Yeah.
It's hard to find the time and carve the time out in your week. That's what goes first,
yes.
Hey? Like those external engagements, and you become quite insular and you really believe your own BS after a certain point.
Yeah.
Which was actually the same. I consulted with a company and then for a couple of years I did my own thing.
Yes, okay.
Towards the end of that time, I actually found that quite uncomfortable because, you know, you really do start to believe your version of events and there's not really anyone to kind of test.
So that's and challenge.
That's what attracted me to then I've now got a team of 350 or 400 people.
Yes.
There's no shortage of opinion and people telling you that you're on the
track. You're on the wrong track.
I like that. I like that. It's a all-in scrum of perspectives.
Yeah.
Which is quite unique, I think.
Yeah. I'll have to work out what the netball equivalent is to a scrum though, Dave.
That's right.
Toss
you still play netball?
I do, very badly. Yes.
I'm
always injured.
I thought you'd give it up through injury. Yeah.
I am. I'm currently injured. That's a bit of a sore point.
Yeah.
It's okay. We'll get there one day back on the court on a Zimmer frame.
On a Zimmer.
Potentially. And one of the things when I talk to industry representatives about Logan.
Yep.
It's very rare in that sentence for your name not to be mentioned, and always, I would say, almost without exception, in a positive way.
I don't know that you're being. I could give you a few people to talk to that probably don't have to say.
There's always positive adjectives, and definitely no swear word in that sentence.
Right.
But I think, Dave, that you know, despite, you know, whatever challenges and debate you're having at that stage over a particular project, the thing that is always mentioned is your very direct approach. And something I know industry really appreciates in terms of stakeholders is an early no is better than a really long yes sometimes.
Yeah.
That's been a hallmark of how you conducted yourself. Is that always a characteristic of Dave Hansen, or is that something you've had to grow and work on and as you become more confident?
Yeah, no, definitely not always been the case. But, and I think that's a gift that local government has given me.
Yeah, it's okay. Interesting.
Because, yeah, you can get a bit one-eyed in the private world and it's just about that result.
Yes.
But there's, you know, performance-based planning or investment attraction or, you know, any of the realms across which I now operate,
yeah,
there's no black and white answer to any of this. So it's trying to get a deep understanding of people's perspectives. And like you say, if it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere.
Yes, call it.
It's a no, and it can be a no, a time-bound no, where you say, listen, this just isn't the right time, but can we keep talking about it?
Yes.
Or it's, listen, we're not the right city.
Yeah.
And that conversation has happened as well. Like, I don't think we're the ones for your investment for these reasons. And some people accept that and some people don't.
Yes.
But no, definitely not something that I had early in my career, along with many other things, you know, many other mistakes I've made with teams and thinking that it's my way or the highway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I've probably arrived in a much more moderate space.
A bit more zen, Dave, do you think?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, zen is a strong word. But, just clear, I guess, in your own convictions and what the organisation, what the city needs. Like that thinking distills over time. And you don't need to be, whether it's personally or professionally or even the organisation you work for, you do not need to be all things to all people.
No.
Yes. People need to make a choice that they can't necessarily shoehorn their vision into you or or where you're working or what the city is. So that's been a realisation that probably should have made a long time ago.
With experience comes all of this great knowledge.
Totally.
When you are looking at team decisions in terms of how you might pull a particular project team together to tackle a particularly big and hairy problem, what are some of the general skills and attributes you look for, apart from netball players?
The netballs,
you know, netball players straight in, probably.
They're usually a bit too vicious. Actually,
yeah, only the goal attacks.
Yeah. I've always been drawn to the same sort of people in a team, I guess. It's the that kind of quiet capability, bit of humility, very authentic people.
Yeah.
I guess ambitious, but not in the sense of the word that makes it ugly.
Yes.
Ambitious for what we're going to collectively achieve. So I think you get very good at spotting team people who are motivated by the right things.
Yeah.
And also those that are taking advice really well. So we, you know, government oscillates between let's pull everyone in-house and kick all the contractors and consultants out to, God, man, now we're short of skills. Let's load up on externals.
Yeah.
So there's somewhere in the middle of all that, which is not only the best resourcing model, because you couldn't hope to recruit everyone you need these days, even if you tried. But somewhere in the middle of all that is the perfect blend of external and internal thinking.
Yeah.
And I think elected reps should seek that view, you know, that broad perspective from staff.
Yeah.
And if you can't give them that, then there's something wrong.
Yes.
So, and not all staff welcome that kind of external oversight and external thinking.
Yeah. We're still yet to find the balance there, aren't we?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. Every organisation's different, like state is different to, and feds are different to local.
Yes.
But it's, the capacity to attract talent. You know, I don't know that anyone's got true capacity to fill their team with all internal staff. So you got to embrace it.
Yeah. And work out a way.
And it just does add great things into the way that an organisation performs.
Yeah.
Then you got extra, like digital transformation, for instance, is a journey that Logan's on, hugely expensive and hugely time-consuming for the organisation, but a really noble cause because, once again, without it, the way that we do things at the moment are just not sustainable.
So it's that search for efficiency along the way, isn't it?
Yep. And a huge amount of change and huge amount of risk.
Yes.
And like me, I don't come from a deep digital background. We've added a lot of digital services in our own right, which have been really successful. But when you then lift that up to the 2,000 people odd, you know, billion-dollar budget, what could possibly go wrong?
No, that's right.
And, you know, so many examples. Yeah, so many examples that people are very quick to say, don't do this, don't do that.
Yeah. But,
so that's when you really need to rely on your team and And whether that's the councillor team or the exec team or the broader team.
Yes.
Everyone's got to be on board.
And pulling in the right direction.
Yeah. And it's fine to say, I don't know where it's going to land, but it's got to be pulling in the right in the same direction.
It's always helpful, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
So what's your focus for 2024? Can be a mix of business, professional, personal.
Personal, I got three boys in high school now. So
did you nearly say little boys?
I did.
Yes.
There'll always be little boys in my mind. But they're year 7, 8, and 10 now.
Wow.
So I thought, like, as they grew up, and this was where everyone laughs at me, who's got older kids, like, surely it gets easier and the problems. No. So, yeah, just making sure I've got enough time in my life.
Yes.
Sometimes, like everyone, you run short and you think, I'm doing a pretty shitty job here. But, and they're mad keen into sport and just making sure I can enjoy that with them.
What sports, Dave? Soccer?
Soccer, yeah.
So that fits in with the obsession as well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, I share that obsession.
Excellent.
Not in terms of the skills they have to play it. I don't know. But, so the little holidays, the little breaks, mini breaks worked for me last year.
Yes,
so I'm trying.
So replicate that.
Trying something new. Work-wise.
Not much on, I hear.
No, not much. No. Elections are always a different year, so the focus is on making sure we receive a new council well, which is not always guaranteed.
No.
Sometimes the process you build to receive a new council doesn't connect.
Yes.
And we learn from that. So we're pretty excited about this. We'll have a new mayor this time and you know, chances are a few new councillors. So the organisation has to step up and do great things and then build the trust in a new group on the things that we kind of have been aiming at and the new things that we should be aiming at. So that'll be a distraction through. And then we've got the state election, which is a real advocacy opportunity.
Yes.
So making sure we're clear in what we put forward
and
it's based on real things, not just a wish list.
Yep.
And then there's new planning schemes, there's regional plan implementation, which is a kind of waiting to see some good detail on how we can make sure that our part in that is a positive part. So heaps.
Yes, heaps more of big year.
You know, seeing recycling centres that we, like I mentioned before, we're building with Ipswich and Redlands, you know, that's a huge investment across three different cities.
Yep.
It must succeed.
Yes.
It will succeed, but the amount of effort that is required for those sorts of things,
yep.
which, you know, compared to you could have just kept business as usual and kept doing what we've been doing, but we think there's going to be enormous advantages in terms of the savings and just, I guess, that constant conversation of what does local government do to open up more revenue?
Yes.
How do we be more focused in what we're delivering and not get distracted by the things that the money isn't in any way sloshing around local government. You got to be really focused on what you do next and why you're doing it.
Yeah.
And there's always improvements to be made there. So that kind of thinking just is consuming my colleagues and I these days. So, but they're awesome conversations. How do you, you know, deliver better services for less money?
Yes. Perennial question.
Perennial question. But, I feel like 2024 is going to be huge. And the years, you know, obviously the 6, 7, 8 years ahead, huge opportunity.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't rather be anywhere other than Southeast Queensland, as much as it feels like a cluster.
Yes.
At times
and
most of the time. You know, we have some incredible talent throughout this region, both in and out of government.
Yeah.
So it's really just that coordination piece.
Yes.
But I don't fear for the future. I think it's just going to take an enormous amount of effort to get where we know we are going to get to.
Yeah.
And that is really to get a world-class region doing amazing things for our community.
Yeah.
So it's exciting times.
Exciting. And a bit more of the sampling of the vanilla slices.
That goes without
saying. Preparation for the coffee table book / Instagram.
Yeah.
Famous.
Just got to pick what those five are. I think it's
sausage roll has to be on there, surely.
Vanilla slice.
Yes.
But really uncertain on the other three.
Yeah, look, you don't need to be held to decisions now, Dave.
I don't.
The sausage roll must be on there. It's very important.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, Dave, it's been great to talk to you and it is great to have this continuing conversation and relationship with you in terms of how we deal with growth, how we deal with economic development in the region and that small issue of infrastructure funding and delivery. Yeah. But industry always appreciates your role in facilitating development.
Likewise. So, wouldn't be where we are without the industry, would we?
That's it. Excellent. Thank you so much, Dave.
No worries. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the UDIA Queensland's Development Drum podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us. Remember to rate and review this show on your favourite podcast app. While you're there, please make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss an episode.